From Australia of runaway rabbit overpopulation and the diseases that cooped-up birds caused. So the habitat's residents got their protein from fish, frogs, soy derivatives, and the processed products of the food factory, popularly known as McGlop. When they did not make their own meals in their quarters, they usually ate in the cafeteria. The cafeteria was the biggest enclosed space in the habitat, and between meals it often served as a makeshift theater or auditorium. It was after the habitat had cleared the asteroid belt and started on the leg of its flight that would take it to Jupiter that Eberle called a public meeting there. The meeting was set for 2200 hours, and there were still a few people finishing their dinners when Eberle's team, including Holly, began to move all the tables and chairs to one side of the spacious room to clear the floor for the incoming audience. Eberle stood frowning impatiently at the far end of the room next to the little stage on which he planned to make his speech. He could see the cafeteria staff and its robots across the way, cleaning their steam tables and display cases, rattling piles of dishes and glassware. He did not see a large crowd assembling. Ruth Morgenthau scanned the thinly scattered audience. "All the people from my department are here," she claimed. "Not many others, though," said Sammy Viborg. Colonel Kananga smiled thinly. "This is all being vetted. All have the names and dossiers of everyone here." "It's the names of those who are not here that I want," Eberle growled. "A simple matter of subtraction," said Kananga, and he smiled as if amused by some inside joke. Once the last of the diners had gotten up and their tables were shoved out of the way, Morgenthau climbed heavily the three steps of the speaker's platform and spread her arms for silence. The muted buzz of the crowd's many separate conversations slowly stopped, and everyone turned toward her expectantly. Holly had been positioned by the main door, which opened out into the village's central green. Her duty, Eberle had told her, was to encourage anyone outside to come in and to discourage anyone inside from leaving. He had given her two rather large, muscular young men from the security department to help her in the latter task. She felt disappointed that so few people had turned out for Eberle's speech. There was no other public entertainment on the agenda for this evening. She had made certain of that before scheduling his appearance. With 10,000 people in the habitat, she had expected more than a couple of hundred to show up. At least Dr. Cardenas had come in, giving Holly a cheerful hello as she strode through the open door. But where's everybody else? Holly wondered. Still, Morgenthau smiled jovially at the audience, as if everyone this side of Calcutta had crowded the cafeteria floor. She thanked the people for coming and promised them an evening of the greatest importance since we started this long journey into a bright and glorious future. Holly watched the faces of the onlookers. They appeared more curious than anything else, hardly fired with enthusiasm for a glorious future. Then Eberle climbed up onto the stage and stepped to the podium. He nodded curtly to Morgenthau, who, still smiling, stepped to the back of the stage. "Why doesn't she get off the stage?" Holly wondered. "She's distracting people's attention from Malcolm." For several long moments, Eberle simply stood at the podium, gripping its sides, staring out at the audience in cold silence. The crowd began to stir uneasily. Holly heard muttering. At last, Eberle began to speak. "Each of you has received an announcement of the series of contests to be held for the purpose of naming the villages and other features, both natural and architectural, of this habitat."
"I didn't get an announcement," came a man's low grumble from the audience.
Kananga glared and pointed. Two husky, young, black-clad men converged on the man. Eberle smiled at the heckler, though. "The announcement is in your mail. Simply check your computer. It's there, I promise you." The man looked startled by the two security officers now standing on each side of him in their black coveralls. Eberle resumed, "This is your habitat. It is your right to choose the names you want for its natural and man-made features."
Besides, these contests will be fun. You will enjoy them, I promise you. People glanced at each other and murmured. A few turned around and started walking toward the door. I'm not finished, Everly said. The crowd paid scant attention. It began to break up. A woman raised her voice loudly enough for everyone to hear. I don't know about you, but I've got work to do tomorrow morning. More people began drifting toward the door. Listen to me, Everly demanded, his voice suddenly deeper, stronger, more demanding. You are the most important people in this habitat. Don't turn your backs on your own future. Their muttering stopped. They turned back toward Everly, every eye focused on him. The others, Everly said, in a voice more powerful than Holly had ever heard before. Those who are too lazy or too timid or too poorly informed to be here will envy you in time. For you are the ones who are wise enough, strong enough, brave enough to begin to seize the future in your own hands. You understand that this is your habitat, your community, and it must be controlled by no one except yourselves. Right, someone shouted. Holly was staring at Everly, dimly aware that everyone in the crowd was doing the same now, listening, hearing that richly vibrant voice and the mesmerizing message it carried. She jumped nearly out of her skin when someone tapped her on the shoulder. Hey, I didn't mean to spook you. Holly saw a smiling, solidly built, youngish man with a rugged bulldog face, dark eyes, and darker hair. What's going on? He asked in a stage whisper. Holly gestured toward the stage and whispered back, Dr. Everly is giving a speech. Everly? Who's he? She shook her head and touched a finger to her lips, then pantomimed for him to come into the cafeteria and listen. Still smiling, the man stepped past her, then stood at the rear of the crowd and crossed his beefy arms over his chest. Everly was saying, Why should you be governed by rules made hundreds of millions of kilometers away, written by old men who know nothing of the conditions you face? What do they know of the problems you encounter every day? What do they care? It's time for you to create your own government and choose your own leaders. Someone began clapping. The rest of the crowd took it up, applauding and even cheering out loud. Holly clapped along with the others, although she noticed that the newcomer kept his arms folded. Soon Everly had them roaring their approval with almost every sentence he spoke. The crowd became a single, unified creature, an animal with many heads and hands and bodies, but only one mind, and that mind was focused entirely on Everly's message. It's up to you to build this new world, he told them. You will be the leaders of tomorrow. They applauded and stamped and whistled. Holly thought they would storm the platform and carry Everly off on their shoulders. The newcomer turned to her and shouted through the noisy accolade. He knows how to turn them on, doesn't he? He's wonderful, Holly yelled back, hammering her hands together as loudly as she could. Everly smiled brilliantly and thanked the audience several times, and finally stepped down from the platform to be immediately surrounded by admiring people. The rest of the crowd began to break up and drift outside. The newcomer asked Holly, Am I too late to get something to eat? The cafeteria is closed until tomorrow morning, Holly said. Gesturing toward the food dispenser, she added, You can get something from the machines. He wrinkled his pug nose. Stale sandwiches and sodas that make you belch. Holly giggled. Well, there are the restaurants. They stay open till midnight, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, he said. I guess that's it.
The last of the crowd was leaving, little knots of two or three talking about Everly's speech. Chris Cardenas stopped beside Holly. I'm going over to the bistro for some dessert. Would you like to join me? The newcomer said, Why don't the two of you join me? Holly glanced at Cardenas. She knew the man's face, but she couldn't recall his name or occupation. Sensing her puzzlement, he said,
My name is Manuel Gaeta. I am not part of your regular population here. You're
the stunt man, Holly blurted, remembering now.
Gaeta smiled, almost shyly.